Board Chair. I'm going to go ahead and call our meeting to order at 8 a.m. July the 12th, 2023. We'll do a real quick roll call again and make sure we have, everybody is present. Heather, could you do that while I deal with this computer?
Yes. Dr. Campbell?
Here.
Dr. Foreman?
Here.
Dr. Yolanda?
Here.
We have a form.
Thank you. And we also have our guests that are present. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and ask, does anyone have any conflicts of interest on any agenda item? Hearing none, we're going to then move on to our number five items for board review, discussion, and possible action. We have investigation file subheading A, and one investigation to hear today, and that is complaint number 22-09-B. Is Dr. Stephen Moore. Dr. Moore is present telephonically. His counsel, Mr. Moscow, is present in the board conference room, and Dr. Worcester is the investigator on this case. So I'm going to ask Dr. Worcester if she could give us her report, if she can summarize, or whatever method she chooses to give the report. So Dr. Worcester, whenever you're ready.
All right, thank you. So with the complaint number 22-09-B, like to see Dr. Stephen Moore, the board is investigating a malpractice case that was settled in the amount for $500,000 that Dr. Moore listed on his 2022, Arizona DCM license renewal in regards to, quote, excessive use of steroid injections and fraudulent billing, quote, period. Plaintiff filed complaints regarding medical malpractice, breach of fiduciary duty, fraud, constructive fraud, fraudulent concealment, and consumer fraud. In regards to what was entailed in the complaint that was included in the file, it's a licensee response, as well as malpractice documents and records from Peoria Foot and Ankle Specialist. There was also notes from Regenerative Foot and Ankle LLC, as well as billing financials. So in through evaluating that, the licensee responded regarding the plaintiff's attorneys, and his attorney filed a pre-answer motion to dismiss case claims in regards to breach of fiduciary duty, fraud and constructive fraud, fraudulent concealment, and consumer fraud. The licensee was successful on this motion to dismiss and then settled with the plaintiff on medical malpractice. However, it is important to note that in the settlement, settlements are made for a multitude of reasons, and the settlement agreement that was signed contains a section titled, quote, no admission of liability, quote, which states that, quote, settlement should not be construed as an admission of liability, negligence, damages, or fault, or admission that any of the plaintiff's assertions against the defendant are true. In terms of the malpractice summons, it was for the patient in regards to a series of injections as well as before surgery and then post-surgery. Patient underwent partial coalition resection on April 2020 to resect the calcaneonovicular bar. On the first post-op visit a few days later, patient had excessive radiating pain and burning and a positive Snell sign to the superficial peroneal nerve. At this point in time, the patient was prescribed Norco 10-325, a medrol dose pack, a nerve block with a steroid injection to the superficial peroneal nerve of the right ankle, and the discussion was had regarding a PRP and amnio injection, which started his course at Regenerative Foot Ankle. Through the course of this, the patient had a total of, excuse me, just lost my place. total of 10 injections post-surgically over the span of 2.5 months in regards to the statute and rule violations in which unprofessional conduct has been determined. Based on a review, there was concern for adequate records on a patient, as well as conduct or practice that might be harmful or dangerous to the health of the patient, and then obtaining a fee by fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation. There was also concern in terms of billing procedures when the billing was done in the office with a 25 modifier for the joint and tendon injections. Based on E&M guidelines, they should be separately identified E&M, as well as there was billing for two large joint injections when the patient only had injection of one intermediate joint injection. Any questions regarding my report?
Yes, thank you very much, Dr. Wisbrow. I do have a couple of questions for Dr. Campbell. So do you feel that the records were sufficiently documented to achieve the level of services that were billed for?
There is an echo. Are you able to repeat the second half of the question, please?
Oh, certainly, yes. Okay, so the E&M codes that were billed for, do you believe that the documentation and the record supports those levels of service?
Based on when the E&M code was billed, I did not find that it was separately identifiable for the reason for injection. The discussion was in regards to the patient's foot and ankle pain, and so there was not a separate diagnosis that the injection would be for versus the E&M. So it's one of the same. It should have been billed one or the other.
On the medical dose pack that was given, did he document that for, because I was trying to determine this, whether it's for the superficial peroneal nerve that was given, and there was also notations in this medical record that the patient had gout, because there was a time where the doctor ordered uric acid but injected, and then there was a mental dose pack. So it's like, okay, then there's nothing in the chart showing any result of a uric acid. And then there was notation that the PCP was treating the gout. So it's like, okay, because how long was this patient on? Did he have multiple mental dose packs, et cetera, is what I'm trying to look at with all these injections. That's a lot of steroids.
Yes, it was a little bit difficult with the records to determine, you know, what was being followed up on and what the injections were for, what the injections entailed. In terms of the injections done at regenerative foot and ankle, the first injection does specify that it was 1.5 cc's of a 50-50 mixture of 1% lidocaine with epinephrine and then a 0.5% marking plane to the dorsal cutaneous nerve of the right foot. But in future visits, other than the local anesthetic that was documented, it did not specify what other type of injection was being performed and in terms of matching up with the billing for that. So based on the records, the only thing that was being shown was that it was a local anesthetic injection, and then there was some other type of injection done, whether under fluoroscopic or ultrasound guidance, but it was not specified as to what those other injections entailed and why the billing was what it was. Visit on April 2020 was for $33,000. April was for $34,000. And in terms of the procedure notes, they were essentially the same in terms of what was entailed, so why there is a difference in the cost and how much it bills to the patient and the patient's insurance, that really wasn't specified.
Because I noticed on, you know, each time when from the regenerative medicine group that
in the podiatry note or whatever the postoperative report note or whatever you want to call it, it was always indicated that there was 1 cc of Decadron that was injected in addition to that. Can you think of any reason why a doctor would continue the same treatment over and over again, and when there was no documentation of any improvement or reevaluation of the patient's status?
Obviously, I'm not evaluating the patient. You know, I wasn't there at the specific time and location as to which these evaluations and treatment modalities were being employed. However, I was a bit taken aback that the therapeutic injections, whatever they entailed, consisted of were started so quickly after the postoperative first visit, and then there were no further postoperative visits in the office. Everything was done at this regenerative medicine LLC, and I think given the fact that there was no discussion really on how the patient was improving or not improving, and that there was a series of 10 postoperative injections in a 2.5 month period, which is essentially one each week, I personally don't see why the treatment would have been continued, or at least some sort of documentation on in terms of reevaluation as to why these were continued the way that they were.
Okay. And I have another question. You know, there was documentation or indication that there was a fracture of the calcaneus because too much bone was removed when the fibrocartilaginous coalition was, you know, in the, being resected. And I'm not finding any other documentation about it. And did you see any images that were indicated that this occurred?
So there were several advanced imaging done. So the surgery was April of 2020. So the MRI of the right foot in February 2020 did show a fibrous calcaneovesicular coalition as well as pedicellianus. And then the ankle at that same point in time showed the same thing. After the surgery, MRI of the right foot in May showed no relevant findings, and then did show a posterior tibial tendon tear on the MRI of the right ankle. But then when the patient continued to have pain, and there was question if later imaging showed that the coalition was fully resected, I did have question as to why intraoperative fluoroscopy was not done in the OR, as well as why range of motion was not evaluated in the OR, or how it showed that there was proper movement when there was still this calcaneovesicular bar that was still present. So I think that the documentation based on the operative report as well as the clinical findings later on, they didn't really quite match up.
Because when they mentioned this, you know, a calcaneal fracture, I'm like, okay, but there's nothing else in there. So that goes back to this issue of documentation. One other point, too. With the injection of a, you know, you've got the MRI that's showing we've got a partial tear of a posterior tibial tendon, and why there's a course of 4 injections, and with the first injection, he's still allowing the patient to be weight-bearing in a cam walker. You feel that that's, you know, standard of care?
If the patient's weight-bearing in a cam walker boot and found to have a partial tear of the posterior tibial tendon, I feel that I would do something similar based on where the patient had pain. But again, the notes at the regenerative medicine clinic aren't very specific in terms of where patient had pain. It says patient's walking in boot with crutches, still having pain, but not specifying exactly where the pain at is. The injection was done to the calcaneonavicular joint, and then there was intermediate dorsal cutaneous nerve injection. So at this point, really, there wasn't much specified in terms of where the actual pain was, but I do think a weight bearing in a posterior, or weight bearing in a cam boot with a partial tear is deficient. You know, there's other modalities that could have been done, physical therapy, you know, and then possibly transitioning the patient out of the boot to an ankle brace to see if he's able to be weight bearing, and then at that point in time evaluate whether surgical repair of the tendon is necessary. But I do think that initially weight bearing in a cam boot would be appropriate.
Thank you very much. Dr. Ulano, do you have any questions for Dr. Lusker?
No, I don't have any questions for Dr. Lusker. Thank you, Dr. Lusker.
Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions for Dr. Lusker?
No, it was a very complete report, and you asked the questions I had. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right. Thank you, Dr. Worcester. Now we have Dr. Moore is present on telephone, as well as his counsel is present here. I will ask, does Mr. Moskow have any comments he'd like to make before we hear from Dr. Moore?
Not right off the bat, Dr. Campbell. I'll defer to Dr. Moore. I may have something to add, perhaps for context or something to that effect after Dr. Moore addresses the Dr. Worcester's summary and her answers to your question.
Thank you. All right. So, Dr. Moore, thank you for being in attendance. And if you could summarize your care and recollections of this case, we'd appreciate it.
Yes. Sorry. Thanks for letting me meet over the phone. I'm out in Wickenburg today. It's an underserved area, and I'm the only podiatrist for the rest of the week, so I apologize. Any other day, I would have been there. I am having a hard time. I heard Dr. Worcester perfectly, but I'm having a hard time hearing you guys. I'll go ahead and answer to everything that was talked about, and I'll try to go in order. So the uric acid, gout was on my differential diagnosis, along with a coalition. He went to his primary care doctor who ordered the uric acid and tested positive for gout. That's why it showed gout in the notes. Now, as far as the regenerative medicine note and the billing, there was nothing billed to the patient. I didn't collect a dime from this patient either before or after. I know you guys had mentioned some of the amounts, but nothing was collected at any time. In fact, a lot of money was lost because of the amniotic injections that we used to try to treat this patient and heal him. We're not covered. And there were made mention of a lot of improvement throughout the process. So I'm not sure why that was said, but he did improve significantly after we started those therapeutic injections. The intraoperative intraoperative fluoroscopy was used during surgery. I did have a C-arm there, so I did use that. And another question that was raised is why everything started so quickly. He was in a tremendous amount of pain initially. He was being somewhat non-compliant. The first time... I'm sorry?
Go ahead, doctor. So
We're listening.
Okay, so he came into the office initially with a lot of pain with crutches and boots. He declined getting x-rays. We had a visit. We tried to talk about the process, the post-operative protocols, and how we handle that. He was asking for other pain relief. I gave him the option of going to our outpatient treatment center, where we had options to other medications. We could use intraoperative fluoroscopy, ultrasound. We had anesthesia available. He was a very anxious young man, so we gave him that option. And he chose to go to that facility. We gave him options, and he made the decision. And that's what he chose. And the injections that we gave him were amniotic injections. If you look in the notes, there's two notes for each day that we treated him. And this is the way the billing company had requested that we do it, that we do the procedure note as a therapeutic injection, and that there's a follow-up personal note where we specify exactly what we used, which was the amniotic membrane. in regards to his treatment, so it wasn't just a boot that we had, or that I had recommended. He was in a boot. We started physical therapy. We did the amniotic injections. He did eSTEM. I was in contact with his physical therapist. I was in contact with him, and we were seeing him weekly because he was in such an out-of-proportion pain. It was kind of not typical of this type of procedure. But several weeks in, he got a significant amount of improvement.
So when you were talking about an extraordinary amount of pain, were you ever thinking about chronic regional pain syndrome, that he was an anxious individual? I mean, there's nothing documented that shows that, you know, that there were any signs or symptoms of it. But was that something that was in your mind?
The CRPS, is that what you asked?
Yes,
No, that early on, it didn't cross my mind, no, because some of the, like, physical examinations, stuff didn't really match up.
Yeah.
So, no, to answer your question.
Okay, Dan, can you repeat what you said about how you were instructed on the insurance company, how you were supposed to write your notes? You had two separate notes.
Yeah, so when we're in the outpatient treatment center, they have us write a note where we're detailing the procedure, and then we dictate a second note specifying the medication that we used and how much of it, and that's where the amniotic tissue was detailed. So I think that's where the confusion was, where you guys didn't really know what was being used or what was being injected.
Yeah, because I'm trying to remember where in the medical records I would find that, because I, you know, go through everything, and, you know, I find your procedure note, but then a second note showing what was injected.
Yeah, I have the chart in front of me, and for each day that we treated, there's two separate notes on the same day, on the same treatment day.
We'll look in here, and, okay. Well, I have some other questions, too, I'd like to ask you.
Sure. If I might, Dr. Campbell, I just want to chime in very briefly, if we happen to know, on just, you know, Dr. Moore had said almost in passing that the patient was non-compliant. One of the things that might not have been wasn't represented in the notes is the patient actually saw, I believe, toward the end of his treatment with Dr. Moore, and then after it, a second, third, fourth, and fifth opinion. He saw four additional podiatrists, all of whom made recommendations, including simply having his coalition fully resected, and he refused every single recommendation. He really. But I only bring that up because I think it speaks to what a difficult patient, in terms of non-compliance, this was.
I'm glad you brought that up, Ken, because part of those, the two of those podiatrists he saw, they actually reached out to me after the fact, then called me and said, there's this guy, hey, you treated him, he's kind of exhibited some strange behavior. From the looks of it, you did everything that I would have done. They didn't see anything that was off the wall or anything that they would have changed.
But I just thought it was an interesting, rather telling, sort of, I think, important fact that he did see, including Dr. Moore, five podiatrists, and at least for the second, third, fourth, and fifth opinions, disregarded everything they saw. He would say, and the reason why he saw so many, he'd see somebody once, didn't like what they recommended, he'd see somebody, that's his right, obviously, but then he'd see another doctor who would say, well, I think you should do this. And at least two or three of them said, you just need to have this fully resected and you know, taken care of. And he didn't do that. And by the end of the litigation, he hadn't sought any further treatment whatsoever, which, of course, that's his right. I think it goes, the noncompliance goes to, particularly when, as Dr. Moore said, he did do an intraoperative, I think it was a fluoroscopy, and then afterwards he said, well, you know, let's get some imaging on you, because obviously Dr. Moore, I assume, wanted to make sure that it wasn't an inadequate resection, And that was, you know, a patient denied that for, what I look at, if I recall correctly, months. So I just wanted to throw in that. I didn't want to take too much time. I think Dr. Moore has more important things to say to the board. You have more important things to
I did note in the documentation that there was one note about non-compliance and then about other physicians. I don't remember five, but
yeah, maybe there were couple. Well, there weren't five others. There were four others, so five total, including Dr. Moore.
Okay. Yeah, I did have a few more questions I'd like to ask. So you explained about this, the documentation was from Peoria Foot and Ankle and then Regenerative Foot and Ankle. So what's the impetus behind where you could have done that work or injections in the office? Why you go down a couple suites to Regenerative Foot and Ankle to do those treatments?
Yeah, so we give the patient the option. I didn't report to anybody to go anywhere, but we gave him options to say we had some medication, amnio and PRP, that were available to help expedite the healing process. And I told him, with him being as anxious as he was, there was anesthesia available if he needed it, and that we just had a little bit more freedom as far as treatment. I said, I can treat you here, or we can go next door and treat you there. It's your call. Insurance would cover a little bit more at our facility. He thought that was better for him, and he wanted access to a little bit better care. So that's what we gave him.
Okay. So do other outside practitioners then use your facility for injections?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Yeah. Do other practitioners in the area use the Regenerative Foot and Ankle facility to do similar treatments on their patients?
Yeah, so we had, I think, six podiatrists using the facility. It no longer exists. Actually, shortly after this, there were some weird billing practices that we didn't feel comfortable with, so we shut it down, and we haven't done it in years. But yeah, there were probably six other podiatrists performing the same type of procedures there.
So what was the issue with the billing practices? Were they doing stuff that was questionable?
So I never saw the amounts that were billed until this came out, this lawsuit. I had no idea what was being billed. I don't feel comfortable billing that much. We ultimately made the decision that it wasn't the right thing to do.
Now, when you say that, because there's a notation in that document that somebody from the office asked that all of those billings be canceled.
That all those billing fees be what? Sorry?
Be canceled. For
someone asked?
For the treatments that were done at Regenerative Medicine. You know, there's a...
To this particular patient, correct?
Yes,
yeah,
that's correct.
That's what Dr. Moore indicated earlier, that they didn't bill anything.
Yeah. So was it because of that situation you're describing that there was things going on and that's why you didn't end up billing the patient for things? Or
why
those
didn't
two
those
separate people? Things?
No. So we didn't bill the patient because he consented to have the procedures done, but he didn't sign the paperwork or consent to have his insurance billed, so we never billed it.
Oh.
And again, at the time, I had no idea what the numbers were. It's an off-site billing company. They're obviously trying to make a large profit. And after seeing a little bit of that, we stopped doing it.
So they had to reverse it themselves, the billing company did.
Oh, so the billing company was the one that reversed the charges.
I think I missed that.
The billing company, then that outside billing company, was the one that had reversed the charges. Because that's what that notation in the record showed. I mean, and there was some documentation about that. Okay. So with the issue of the partial tear of the posterior tibial tendon, by what I can see on your documentation, obviously there was local anesthesia. And did you inject 1 cc of Decadron in there, or were you using the amniotic fluid?
I was using the amniotic tissue.
Okay. Again, that's where the documentation is so confusing that, you know, it's like, why would anybody, I mean, you know, inject four times of a steroid into it, then, okay. Again, like I said, that...
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. That was an oversight on my part. That was a misdocumentation. I would never done it. I've never done it. But you're exactly right.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to just run through because I know everybody, we've kind of been discussing some of my questions that that came up here. So, yeah, I do have, on some of your consents, there was some issue that I found on some of the consent forms where, you know, to give proper full consent on things like, okay, so here we have your surgical consent form that was done for the surgery on April the 3rd of 2020. You've got your nice consent all typed out there, but then you've got your surgical diagrams of the feet, and there's nothing drawn on there to show where that coalition is. Yet the patient signed it. So somebody's not paying attention. Then on the surgical complications, there's nothing about the fact that the patient could experience a decreased range of motion at that joint where the coalition was resected. But this is something that you mentioned specifically in your response to the board, was that, yes, we're going to relieve pain is the hopes of the surgery, and that the patient should expect a decreased range of motion. So here you're talking about this, but it's not listed as a specific surgical complication, and I think that's important to have in there. And in my other on this, and I'm sure it was during the medical time, or during COVID, that you have an acetation for surgery, calling this surgery to be essential and non-elective, and it would steer towards the quality of the life of the patient. So I'm assuming that was the only way that you were allowed to do surgery is to have a patient fill out that. Because we've seen that in other facilities in the state, that people had to have their patients sign those. Am I correct?
I'm so sorry. I'm still having a hard time hearing you. I caught most of it. I can answer to the diagram.
Okay.
Sometimes I'll show the patient on the x-ray. I'll kind of point it out on the x-ray because that makes more sense to them sometimes because it's individual to them. So that answers that question. I heard most, except, I'm sorry, I don't know what the question was at the end. I apologize.
Oh, okay. On the surgical, when you have your surgical complications listed out, you don't mention the fact that they could have decreased range of motion in that joint after that coalition is removed. I mean, you know, tissues have accommodated over time, and it's very likely. But you don't list it there specifically, but when your response to the board was, you mentioned this, that we're trying to relieve pain here, but the patient could definitely experience a decreased range of motion. So I think just in documentation-wise, again, you need to, you know, be more specific at times because you've got those extra lines on that, on those complications, and the where you can put that in there, that that's the most specific to that kind of procedure that you're doing. It just, you know, might help you to release some headaches down the line. And then again, my other comment was about the attestation form that had to be signed for you to do surgery on that patient because it was in 2020. April of 2020, so that deemed that surgery to be essential and non-elective. So, at, you know, now at this point in time, do you consider this surgery as a non-elective surgery?
Do I consider his surgery what? I'm sorry.
Non-elective. I know you had to do it. You had to document it as such at that time, so you could do surgery because of what was going on, you know, in the medical realm.
COVID.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah. So you're not using those forms anymore, are you? Making sure that any facility you go to does not have those, because that's considered, it's an elective surgery. But at that time, like I said, you have, I'm sure that's why you had to have that in there, was because of COVID.
Yeah. I guess I don't understand the question. I don't know if Ken is, but
Dr. Moore, if I can clarify my understanding of the question, I believe Dr. Campbell is just simply asking, I guess, what the form had the surgery you performed noted as non-elective, and her point of view is that's it. It's slightly not a non-elective surgery, it is an elective surgery, but since you could not perform elective surgeries during the COVID pandemic, that she understands that's why it would say that on the form, that it was non-elective. But now, as we sit here today, she wanted clarification that you no longer would describe this surgery as a non-elective surgery, because the COVID protocols no longer apply and you can do elective surgeries in facilities.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. All right. And then now some things I noticed on the consents that you used for regenerative medicine. So on 429, the consent reads only for the calcaneal navicular joint injection, but it was not written on there that it was also for the intermediate dorsal cutaneous nerve, but you injected that. So you didn't consent, it's not written on the consent, but you did it. So again, that's not good documentation. Then on 6-3 of 20, you consented, it only has the right side circle, and it doesn't say a description of where an injection is going. So that's, again, I think it's not complete.
Okay, I'm hearing everyone really well, but I can't hear you really well.
Let me switch the mic. Maybe that's part of the problem.
I don't know if it's a phone or a system, but if you could get closer, I don't know. I'm right on top of it.
Is this better? I switch mics. Okay. So, like I was saying, just on those consents that were done at the regenerative medicine, on the 29th of April, it said the consent only read for the calcaneal navicular joint, but you also injected for the intermediate dorsal cutaneous nerve. So you only consented for the calcaneal navicular joint, but you did both. So like I said, that's not good documentation, because then that appears that you didn't properly consent, or somebody could take it to mean that. And again, on June the 3rd, same thing, you consent, it just, all is circled is the right side, but it doesn't say where you're treated. So again, then that's like you're not doing this could be considered a non-consent if it's not thorough.
Okay, I'm not specifying on the consent where it's going. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, on that one date, it was June the 3rd.
Because if you look at June the 10th, he does write.
Yeah, then on the next time on June 10th, then you've got it on there. So I'm just saying you got to watch that you're putting it on, because somebody could say, oh, he didn't consent that properly.
Okay, I hear what you're saying. I understand. I appreciate you pointing that out.
Yeah. Sometimes it's those little things that can make a big difference. Let me see if I have anything else I wanted to ask you. Well, we talked a lot about the documentation, and then, of course, we've talked a lot here about the billing, and again, my concern over the PT injections that were actually amnion, which is actually a great way to treat those, because it's natural and there's no side effects and all this. So I think that's all my questions. For me, direct then to my fellow board members. Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions for Dr. Moore?
No, you asked all the questions I had. Thank you.
Dr. Alano, sir, do you have any questions for Dr. Moore?
Sure, I just have one or two questions. Good morning, Dr. Moore. Is it typical for you to give a weekly injection for patients? And how? What is your time frame to assess if it's improving or not with the injection?
So no, this was a very atypical case or situation. He was in extreme pain, and I was doing everything I could to help him. Like I mentioned before, he was exhibiting some very strange behavior at this point. My staff had mentioned it. I noticed it. So I was doing everything I could to get this young man better. I mean, he was upset. He was getting very angry with the staff. So I just did everything that I could. So it was a very unique situation where I would inject someone weekly with the amniotic tissue. I usually give it a little bit more time, several weeks, to assess and see how they're doing. I think in most cases, 2 to 4 weeks after I do PRP or amniotic injection to assess and see where they're at and see if we need to do an additional one.
Okay, that's my question. Thank you.
Anybody else? I did think of one other thing, Dr. Lawrence. Can you comment about this documentation about something about a calcaneal fracture that resulted from the coalition surgery?
If someone that's on the phone could repeat that, I'd really appreciate it.
Okay, I'm right on top of this mic, so I don't know why, what the problem is. My question is, there's notation in the documents that said that there was a calcaneal fracture that resulted from too much bone being removed during the excision.
A calcaneal fracture?
Yes, yes.
Where is this noted?
Hang on. I have to get into my notes to tell you exactly where I've seen it. I think it was, you know, it was part of the description. Let me look back here at my computer. In Dr. Worcester's investigation report, I believe it's in that first paragraph. This was something that was noted in the malpractice claim. I don't know if that is something maybe that opposing that the plaintiff's attorney assumed or was misunderstood.
I don't remember
anything. Mr. Moscow, do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I mean, if it was containing the plaintiff's complaint, those are mere allegations. And again, just like all the other, and you know, I've represented the guy Chris for this board before, who were the recipients of lawsuits from the same plaintiff's counsel, who I, for the record, I get along with quite well, but that's his MO, is to throw in addition to the med-mal allegations, all these other things, hoping they stick, and we were batting 1,000, not good, on getting them dismissed. I understand the strategic reasons he does it, but they're really not valid claims, and just like that, those are not valid claims. A lot of allegations in plaintiff's complaint are not valid and don't pan out. They're all, you know, obviously disputed and have to be proven, and so...
Because here, on the National Practitioner Database...
No, don't read that.
Oh, okay. Well, if it was in that, it was in what the opposing counsel had written, and that's where I saw it, so...
It was part of the malpractice claim.
Okay. Like I said, that's why I was confused, because, you know, I'm sure Dr. Moore would have mentioned it, and so would Dr. Worcester. She'd seen it, so I just kind of went over this list.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny too, is when a lawyer prepares a complaint, or when I, as a civil defense attorney, prepare an answer to a complaint, you know, we have the benefit of usually the medical records and things like that, and we don't, you know, as you all know, medical records are not necessarily the easiest things to read, and certainly to understand as a layperson. There's a lot of shorthand, there's a lot of medical, scientific references and things like that that we don't understand. So it's not uncommon to misinterpret things and all that. And that's why, it's one of the reasons, by the way, why in medical malpractice cases, experts are always required on standard of care and causation, because it's so far outside the purview of a layperson. And, you know, you, in other words, you need an expert to actually explain to a jury in plain English what's happening and why it either satisfied a standard of care or didn't, you know, or caused alleged injuries or didn't, and things like that. And, you know, it's not uncommon to find competing experts. And some experts, let's just say, are more honest and accurate in their assessment than others. You know, obviously, a plaintiff lawyer is, you know, proverbial bread is buttered by obtaining settlements And in order to do that, they have to get an expert that will say what they need the expert to say. So it's not uncommon where you have opinions that you as an actual podiatrist would look at and say, no, but it's enough to survive summary judgment and you know, get to a jury and usually wind up in a settlement. Because the only, I mean, this is cliche, so forgive me for that, but the only people who really benefit from lawsuits are lawyers. I mean, it's interesting to prosecute or defend a lawsuit as a lawyer. It's never interesting or fun for litigants, particularly the defendant. You know, it's one of the things I usually tell my clients is, if you want your day in court, be careful. You might very well get your day in court. And it's hard to sit there with a poker face and listen to a parade of people accuse you of things that you perceive they're knowing you didn't do. It's a very difficult situation. I don't envy people who have to be in that situation. But, you know, but and I think everyone understands that most cases result in settlement. Because it's really, as I said, never a litigant's interest to go to trial.
Dr. Moore, do you have any other remarks or comments you'd like to make?
There's just one other thing I'm seeing. There's a red mark noted on the March 5th note. It said that I didn't mention the MRI. I'm looking at the note now, and I do have a mention of it. And that's where we had the surgical discussion to remove the coalition. So, but I think that's it. I think we covered most stuff. And I'm so sorry. I couldn't hear most of what you were saying. I hope I was able to answer everything that you asked.
Well, we can hear you loud and clear. I don't know what, you know, why my mic is, because like I said, I'm right on top of it. So, Dr. Ilana and Dr. Foreman, have you thought of any other questions you'd like to ask?
I have no further questions. Thank you.
Well, you know,
I don't either.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I think, you know, we've had good questions and have learned a lot from, you know, what, you know, Dr. Moore's side of things. So, you know, I think a lot of things that I was thinking of that were possible issues really are not issues. So, but I do think we have a documentation problem. And so, you know, we need to determine, is this something that is non-disciplinary where we can do CEs regarding improvement of documentation, or do we need to offer consent for a chart review to monitor documentation? So it's, you know, we have to discuss and with opinions here on where we think this sits as far as the documentation, whether it should be disciplinary or non-disciplinary. Obviously, I think we are aware that there was no breach of standard of care here, so that's not an issue that we're dealing with. So I'd like to hear from my board members.
I would think a letter of concern would be adequate for this case.
I would feel a lot of concern, and also just continuing education for documentation and non-disciplinary.
Okay, so Dr. Ilana, what you're saying too, actually it would be more appropriate with a letter of concern. It kind of would fit into just, you know, doing a order for non-disciplinary CMEs to address those issues of documentation. And that would be what I would support. So, Dr. Foreman, can you elaborate more on your opinion?
Yes, I think the documentation was, it was substandard in some cases, and I would agree with some CMEs for improving his documentation.
All right, so. Then how would you all think about, I'll make a motion to offer,
issue
an order for non-disciplinary CMEs in the categories of documentation.
How many hours?
Let's see, how about, I would say 6 hours?
And of course, those are approved. Those are pre-approved by the board, so the doctor has to, you know.
And above.
And this is above the licensure, renewal licensure CEs of 25 hours a year.
And how many days to finish?
And that needs to be completed within 6 months.
Okay.
Perfect. Can I second
the motion?
You want me to reread the motion, Dr. Milano?
Yes, reread it, please.
Yes, okay. So I make a motion to offer a non-disciplinary order for CEs, CMEs, under the topic of documentation for a total of 6 hours, pre-approved by the board, and to be completed within 6 months of the acceptance of the order.
Second the motion.
Pardon me, Dr.
You said second, but we already had it.
Okay, we have this. Okay, it's been moved and seconded, so it's time to vote. So we can just, we don't need a voice vote, or we just need a voice vote together. So all in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Wilson. Thanks,
thank
Dr.
You.
Moore. Thank you, Dr. Worcester.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you,
everyone on the board. And Dr. Moore, I believe that concludes it for us. So we're done here.
You can't hear me anymore.
That's true. I think you can hear me okay.
No, he
can. Yeah, I mean, he was clear as, I don't know what's.
I don't know what it is either.
No, I mean, I was talking right
in. That's the worst, because you don't know if it's on this end or that end.
Yeah.
On, you know, that whether you can hear it or not. But so it sounds like you all have a light day today.
Yes, we do. Moving right along.
All right. Well, nice seeing everyone. Enjoy, hopefully, monsoons to come.
Have a good day.
Thanks, all everyone. Right. Have a good day.
Thank you. All right. So we're going to move to subheading E, initial analysis for Dr. Alan Cole. Dr. Cole, are you still there on the line or here?
I'm still here.
Okay. Thank you for hanging in there. All right. Just a second here. Let me get my... All right. So this is still in what we would just call an initial analysis phase here. And these are just, I mean, you know, everybody remembers this from previous meetings. So the board received a notice that Dr. Cole's privileges were suspended and then they were reinstated. Anyway, and this is really not in our purview, and so it's still in an investigation phase with...
There's no evidence.
Yeah, there's no evidence that there's any violation of any of our state statutes, so I think our best option here is not to open a board complaint.
Take no action.
And so we will take no action. Do you want me to make a motion?
Nope.
No? Okay, so thank you again, Dr. Cole, for being present. That's where we are with this situation. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry, I'm having a similar issue with the other caller that I have difficulty hearing you. It sounds like you're at the other end of the room. And I just want to repeat back what I think I heard, that you're taking no action and the matter is resolved, or I'm sorry, I couldn't hear.
Yes, that is correct, Dr. Cole.
Okay, thank you very much. Do I need to remain any further for anything, or
no,
can I go?
No. You're free
okay,
to go.
So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I appreciate
thank
your
you.
Help. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
He said it's like on the other side of the room.
That is very strange.
Is strange.
Okay. So we will...
I wonder if you're getting picked up by that.
We'll go back here so we don't forget. Number four, the review, discussion, and possible action on our board meeting minutes. And those are the general session minutes of June the 14th, 2023. Does anyone have any additions or corrections to make to the minutes?
Hearing none, I will make a motion to accept our general session board meeting minutes of June 14, 2023 as written.
Seconded.
Thank you, Dr. Foreman. It's been moved and seconded and to accept the general session meeting minutes of June 14, 2023. We'll take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
You should ask them if they can hear you better now.
Now, can you hear me, guys? I mean, Dr. Foreman, Dr. Ilana, can you hear me? Because I hear you really good.
We can hear you. Is it very echoey?
Yeah, initially it was echoey, but not right now at this point yet. I can hear you very well.
That was picking up your voice.
Oh, now maybe the mic on the desk where Mr. Moss, so should we remove that?
I turned it off.
You turned it off. Okay. Maybe that's why it sounded like it was at the back of the room, because he's in the middle of the room. Okay. So, yeah, just holler if you're not hearing. Okay, so our next is the issuance of licenses. We have two. First is McKenzie Cheeseworth, DPM. So everything appears to be application is complete for an initial license application. Does any of you gentlemen have any questions or concerns regarding this applicant? Okay, hearing none, I will make a motion to accept the initial application for regular licensure and for Dr. McKenzie Cheeseworth and to issue the license upon receipt of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? Okay, it's been moved and seconded to accept the initial application of Dr. McKenzie Cheeseworth. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And our next applicant is Jordan Redance. This application is also complete. Does anyone have any questions or concerns? So the only thing that will be needed is he has a DEA. He didn't fill out the dispensing registration. Because if he's at the Indian Health Services, he's going to be dispensing items.
Madam Chair, board members, I believe that he completed the initial application online, so there is a question.
There is, but there are nothing.
Yeah, I'm looking so I can give you the page number. There is a question regarding dispensing and locations and such. It's just getting used to the new system. With how the application is laid out is taking some time. So it would be on page 263 of Dr. Campbell's PDF. It might be a little bit different for Dr. Ulano and Dr. Foreman because they don't have the supplemental information included that I had included after I sent out board materials. But you can find it on page 263, Dr. Campbell.
Thank you. All right. So does anybody else have any questions or concerns here? Okay. Hearing none, I will make a motion to accept the initial application for regular licensure for Dr. Redant and to issue this upon receipt of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you, Dr. Foreman. It's been moved and seconded to accept Dr. Redant's application for licensure. All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Our next is subsetting C is the request for a waiver of continuing medical education for 22-23 from Dr. John Tassone. Last month we requested that when Dr. Tassone made a request regarding a waiver for the CME, we asked for indication of his disability. We did receive, as you can see, the information from the physician. And the physician noted that the doctor was disabled from working as a podiatrist, but he suggested the accommodations of having frequent rest and that he could do remote computer-based teaching. So, in my opinion, if he's able to do online teaching, of course our CMEs can be done all online, that I would think that Dr. Tassone would be able to complete those CMEs online with, we could, you know, obviously give him an extension of time to complete those. So, what do you guys think?
I agree. If he can teach online, he can take a CME online.
Absolutely. CME online is not very different from teaching online. It doesn't take you that much work or effort.
So then...
I'm going to make a motion to give him a 60-day extension.
Right. So then I will go ahead and make a motion to give Dr. John Tassone to deny the requested waiver, but to... give him an extension of 60 days to complete his continuing medical education online.
Seconded.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded to deny a waiver for the CME, but to offer Dr. Tassone an extension of 60 days to complete his online continuing medical education credits for renewal. Any other discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Okay, so the next we have here is the renewal applications for license, and all these positions that are listed here indicated malpractice cases on their renewals. Dr. Wright, he's the third on the list there. Dr. Wright is practices in another state, just holds a license here. So this is actually out of our jurisdiction. So the malpractice matter is not in our concern. He has completed his CMEs, and that includes the 3 hours for opioid training. Does anybody have any questions on that renewal application? Okay. Hearing none, then I will make a motion to accept Dr. Daniel Wright's renewal application.
Second.
Been moved and seconded to accept Dr. Daniel Wright's renewal application. All in favor? Aye. Aye. Anybody out from here? Are you guys, are you there? Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
Okay, I just didn't hear the vote on Dr. Wright.
Aye.
Thank you. Dr. Lano?
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're coming in echoey again.
Okay. All right. So it's been the motion is carried to accept Dr. Wright's reapplication for licensure. All right. Hang on a second. I wanted to mention too that on these next two, that after it After some discussion, it has been determined that it's in the best interest of the board that licensees should keep the board apprised of malpractice issues, and then upon conclusion of those matters, the board will reevaluate and decide if we're going to open a complaint. So that's why on Dr. Wright, he's not, that wasn't within our jurisdiction, so there was no need to open a board complaint. But in these other two, we're going to go over here, then it's in our best interest at this time just to hold the licensee accountable to keeping the board appraised and abreast of what is occurring with their malpractice case. So then that would be our next applicant is Dr. Bangart, Daniel Bangart. Again, he put on there about his renewal that he had a malpractice claim. Anyway, so everything else is in place there. He's been had all his CDs and everything, license fees been paid. So I'll go ahead and I'll make a motion to accept Dr. Bangart, Daniel Bangart's reapplication for licensure. Seeing that the application is complete.
Seconded.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded to accept Dr. Daniel Banger's renewal application. Is there any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. And then our next is Dr. Jared Hall. Same thing, he has the malpractice listed on his. He's completed his CDs, including the opioid training. Does anybody have any questions or concerns? Hearing none, then I will make a motion to accept the renewal application of Dr. Jared Hall, seeing as our application is complete.
Seconded.
Thank you, Dr. Foreman. It's been moved and seconded to accept Dr. Jared Hall's renewal application. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. All right. So, do we need a break or are you ready?
Can we take a break real quick?
Okay, Seamus is requesting a break. So we will. We'll take a 10-minute break?
Yeah.
Okay, sounds good. See you guys back then.